You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good afternoon. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom today, I am Carl Frisch. It is good to be back with you once again. You can find out more about me at my website, carlfrisch.com. I'm a syndicated columnist. I fill in for Tom on occasion. You might have heard me on the Stephanie Miller Show or the Bill Press Show as well, current television. I got to tell you, it's a big day here in Washington, nothing could be more exciting than seeing these arguments now being made before the Supreme Court concerning the Affordable Care Act. The notion by these right-wing attorney generals and Republicans in the states that requiring people to have health insurance is unconstitutional is, as far as I'm concerned, just laughable on its face. But then again, this is the Roberts Supreme Court, so obviously we cannot expect them to do the right thing. I mean, if Citizens United is any indication of where this court is, you want to talk about activist justices. This is one activist bench if I've ever seen one. We want to hear what you have to say about Obamacare. We want to hear what you have to say about the Supreme Court battle. Give us a call toll-free, 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466, and we'll take your calls as we move on this afternoon. We've got a great show lined up for you. We've got folks like Congresswoman Judy Chu, Senator Tom Harkin, Eric Burns, the former president of Media Matters, and we've also got Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, Doug Kendall from the Constitutional Accountability Center, Congresswoman Linda Sanchez, and much, much more. But first, starting off the program today, joining me is a doctor named Congresswoman Judy Chu. Congressman, thanks for joining me.
Great to join you.
So I'm curious, you know, right-wing Republicans across the country, you know, we've got this clip I want to play for you of them calling the Affordable Care Act Armageddon. Let's hear that clip. I think it's clip one.
Those same folks who were hollering about it before it passed, they're still hollering about how the world will end because we passed this bill. This is not an exaggeration. John Boehner called this passage of this bill Armageddon.
So, Congressman, is the Affordable Care Act Armageddon, or is it a sensible way not only to take care of the 50 million Americans who did not have health insurance before you all got the congressional majority in 2006 and this president was sworn in 2009? And also a way of saving us money and reducing our deficit. What's the answer?
Well, it definitely isn't Armageddon. In fact, it's a way of getting health care to millions and millions of people in this country. In fact, right now, 2.5 million additional young adults now have health insurance, even if they are up to the age of 26. And also, 5 million seniors have had a reduction in their prescription drug costs.
Right.
So it's helped millions of Americans.
And I think people don't understand when they say, you know, now children can be covered under their parents' insurance until the age of 26, why that's so important, especially during, you know, the economy that we're in right now. It's getting better, but young people have been savaged by this horrible Bush economy that we were left. Their unemployment is much, much higher, which means they probably haven't been able to find health insurance. Isn't that why it was so important to make sure that they can stay on their parents' insurance just a few years longer?
Well, the provision allowed for them to have a peace of mind to know that they could get sick without having to go into bankruptcy. And unfortunately, medical conditions are one of the biggest reasons that American families go into bankruptcy.
Yeah, it's quite sad. And I mean, you hear stories, horrible stories, about folks who have been bankrupted by insurance, have lost, or by lack of insurance, have lost their homes, have had to make choices between feeding their family and paying for needed medical care. And when they choose not to pay for needed medical care, it only gets more expensive and the situations only get more dire. How are we going to fight Republicans from being able to get in the way of this before it's implemented and brought to the masses?
Well, I think people really need to understand what this health care reform bill is all about. I think they have a lot of misunderstanding about it. when you break down the different components of healthcare reform, then they like it. They like the fact that they can't be denied because of pre-existing conditions. They overwhelmingly like that, in fact.
Well, and, you know, that's a big issue. Because it wasn't just that folks would be denied from getting coverage for pre-existing conditions. A lot of people, you know, would seek coverage for an ailment, you know, some kind of an ailment, you know, maybe cancer or asthma or something else, after paying for their insurance premiums for years, and then only to be rejected from coverage when they actually needed it. Isn't that, you know, some of the stuff that was happening out there?
Oh, yes. And how about those who actually had an insurance plan but then faced a lifetime limit?
Right.
That, just as devastating.
Absolutely. You know, it's one of those things that I think is really separating the two sides here. Are Democrats going to campaign hard on this issue? Because I think the president, members of Congress, the Senate, need to explain to the American people why this is so important. I mean, really get out there. Are we going to use this as an issue going into the elections in 2012?
Oh, yes. We have to fight hard for this because this goes to the quality of life for Americans. And every American deserves to have their health, to be able to live to a ripe old age with the kind of health care that could preserve their true freedom to live.
You're over there right by the Supreme Court, you know, that's hearing these arguments today concerning the Affordable Care Act. How do you get past the noise machine of right-wing, you know, teabag-type folks who claim that there are death panels and that this is unconstitutional? How do you speak louder than them and make sure that the American people can hear you?
Well, I always like to look at individual cases. For instance, how about Mary Brown herself, on whom this case revolves? She is the one that did not want to buy health insurance. I mean, she was very, very much against this mandate. And then her husband fell on poor health. The couple could not afford the medical bills. And now they have to file bankruptcy. And their medical tab will be picked up by the American people. She is exactly the reason why we need this health insurance and this health reform.
Well, and isn't it ironic that, you know, from the very beginning when we started talking about health care reform, at least, you know, in the last 20 years or so, the conservative compromise for health care reform was that there needed to be some kind of a mandate. It's what Mitt Romney built his insurance plan around in Massachusetts. The Heritage Foundation promoted such a thing. Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum, they all came out in favor of a health care mandate. Is this just more of the same from Republicans who see their ideals put into play and have decided that, well, they've got to attack the Democrats simply because that's what wins them elections?
Oh, they are clearly playing partisan politics. And if you look at the reality of it, 98% of Americans will not be affected by the mandate. They either have employer coverage, public health care insurance, or will receive government subsidies for insurance.
Right. This is really about what happens in between when you, for some reason or another, don't have insurance, when you have a pre-existing condition, or for some reason can't get it. Congressman Judy Chu from California, I want to thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Oh, thank you.
You can follow her on Twitter. Make sure you do, at Rep. Judy Chu. That's J-U-D-Y-C-H-U. She's a great champion for working families out in California, my home state, coincidentally. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Coming up after this break, we're going to talk to Senator Tom Harkin from Iowa, who chairs the powerful Senate Health Committee, Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. You won't want to miss it. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next, more on the battle for health care with Senator Tom Harkin.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program with guest host Carl Frisch. Connect with him on Twitter at Carl Frisch and visit carlfrisch.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom today, I am Carl Frisch, like you just heard. We've got a very special guest, one of my favorite senators, here to talk about the fate of the president's health care reform plan before the Supreme Court right now. Senator Tom Harkin from Iowa, he chairs the Senate Health Committee, which a friend of mine works on, actually, the Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Committee. Senator, thanks for joining me.
Hey, Carl. Nice to be with you. I'm having a hard time. There's a lot of people around here, but I'll try to hear everything you ask here.
Well, you know, I'm interested. You know, I have a good friend of mine, like I said, works for you in the Health Committee, and I know how hard you all worked to get the Affordable Care Act through. What's it like to see it standing in front of the Supreme Court in the hands of Justice Roberts?
Well, it's unsettling. We worked very hard to see in the bill, and a lot of good things now have happened to the American people. I mean, when you think about it, you know, we've got 2.5 million young adults in this country now can stay on their parents' plan until they're age 26. That's a big deal. We've got any child up to age 19 can get insurance coverage even though they have a pre-existing condition. That's a big deal. The elderly now can get colonoscopies and prostate cancer screening and mammograms without any copays or any deductibles. That's a big deal. There's no lifetime caps any longer on your policies. That's a big deal. The Republicans want to take all this away, and I'm afraid that that Justice Roberts and this Supreme Court could do the same thing. Although I was there this morning, and I'm still hopeful that the Supreme Court will follow precedence and not politics.
Well, hundreds of years of precedence, really.
Yeah.
You've even had Antonin Scalia, who's written recently about these types of cases, and hopefully that bodes well for us. But, you know, this is a bench that, you know, in large part gave us Bush v. Gore and Citizens United. And so I never count my chickens before they hatch, and I know you don't, Senator. You know, you mentioned the notion that young people would, you know, are being given an extension to be able to stay on their parents' health care. When we've got a shaky economic recovery happening where we're adding more jobs all the time, is this the time now to take the rug out from underneath the economic recovery by throwing, millions of people off of health insurance?
Well, Carl, I think you hit an excellent point. Just as we're coming out of this recession and young people are now finding better opportunities, I tell you, for the Supreme Court to rule against the mandate that everyone has to be in the pool to cover everyone, we would lose all this stuff. And I think you're right. I think it would have a real blow on setting us backward in terms of our economic recovery.
And what do you hear when you're home in Iowa? I've spent a lot of time in virtually every corner of the state, having worked in politics for years for Howard Dean and other people. What do you hear when you're home in the state, Maquoketa or Mason City or Dubuque? Are people worried that the president that the president's Affordable Care Act is in jeopardy?
Well, more and more every day, every week that goes by, more and more people are seeing benefits. As I said,
right.
There's over 18,000, we know, young people in Iowa on their parents' health care plan. And seniors in Iowa last year, more than 40,000 Iowa seniors saved an average of $616 in prescription drug costs because of the Affordable Care Act and closing the donut hole.
That's a rent payment.
That's right. I mean, this is... So now more and more people, you know, 2 years ago in 2010, it was just a promise. And people said, oh, well, you know, they got all excited by the Tea Party people and things like that. But now Iowans are seeing the benefit of it. And I think more and more, as every week goes by, I think more and more people will see that this Affordable Care Act helps all Americans.
So one of the things that we've had to battle as progressives and Democrats, and Senator, you've done a good job of this, are the lies that circulate out there, whether it's death panels, this is unconstitutional, you can't do this, all the lies that have been circulated about this plan. How do we continue to fight back on those lies so that people, you know, you see polls where people believe the lies, but then they also support many of the things that healthcare reform is solving. How do we fight back?
Well, through programs like yours here, the Tom Hartman Show and others, you know, there's an old saying, Carl, I know you've heard it before, that a lie goes around the world three times before the truth laces up its boots.
Yeah.
You know, and that is true. And I've seen that in my lifetime in government and politics. So what we have to do is just be steadfast, be strong, and don't give up, and keep coming back, and keep coming back with the truth and with the facts, and we will prevail. I mean, you know, people fought hard for things in the past like Social Security and Medicare and unions for the right to organize, and some of these things just take a long time, but you can't give up.
Well, and you've been in the Senate quite a while. I'm curious to know what you think. I mean, you've been there long enough to see the Republican evolution when it comes to Medicare and Social Security. They all voted against it, you know, those that were there. You know, they all voted against Social Security, Medicare. They've wanted to gut it. Are you at all surprised that Republicans want to get in the way of the health care plan being completely implemented?
Well, it's kind of interesting because, you know, you're right. Republicans fought Social Security when it came in. They fought Medicare, a lot of the things that that we now take for granted. And so I suppose their fight against health care reform sort of is in line with that. But, you know, after years after Social Security was in and Medicare, a lot of moderate Republicans, they accepted it and said, well,
I just wish that we had more of those in the Senate as your colleague, Senator. But it seems like we're losing them hand over fist. Senator Tom Harkin, I want to thank you for joining me today.
Okay.
Give my best to Elizabeth Baylor on your help committee. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Eric Burns, the former president of Media Matters.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, more with Media Matters former president, Eric Burns.
Take it or leave it, because I'm going to leave it. I purchased my tickets in New York first thing in the
morning.
Welcome
back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom today, all afternoon. I am Carl Frisch. You can find more about me at carlfrisch.com. That's K-A-R-L-F-R-I-S-C-H.com. Follow me on Twitter at Carl Frisch. I'm trying to hit 10,000 followers. I'm very close. I think I'm only like 150 away. Hopefully you can help me get over that little hump there. Up next, to talk more about healthcare reform and this battle waging on in front of the Supreme Court right now is my good friend, the former president of Media Matters for America, and my business partner at Bullfight Strategies, which you can find at bullfightstrategies.com. Eric Burns, hey, buddy.
Hey, Carl. Thanks for having me on.
You know, it's I couldn't think of anybody else I'd rather talk to when it comes to this subject, because you know, when you were running Media Matters, you were in the thick of it and saw the lies that these right wingers would tell about healthcare reform. You know, the death panel smear, for example.
Uh-huh.
What kind of impact do you think those lies have had on the way that we look at this, especially when we have it before the Supreme Court right now?
Well, I would point to one. First of all, Carl, let me say it's had an enormous impact on public perception of the healthcare law, and you know the fact that you know the House and Senate took you know close to a year to pass the bill gave the right wing ample opportunity to distort the legislation and turn quite a few folks in the country against it. And I think the most telling statistic that I have heard to really support that that thesis is, you know, several polls have come out showing that anywhere between two-thirds to like 85% of Americans actually oppose the individual mandate included in the bill, which, of course, as we know, is the singular most important part of the deliberation going on by the Supreme Court.
Right. Well, and they oppose it because they think it's unconstitutional.
Well,
but they actually support much of the rest of the bill, right?
Well, yeah, that is true, and you know,
very strange.
The irony here is that the idea of the individual mandate and the requirement that Americans actually purchase healthcare in the marketplace is a conservative idea that
right.
originated out of the Heritage Foundation. Was embraced by both Mitt Romney and Newt Gingrich.
I think I just heard the Heritage Foundation explode with that comment right there, because they're you know literally next door to our building here on Capitol Hill.
Well, I mean, it's really an amazing example of hypocrisy. And as someone who you know long ago was a Republican in my misspent youth,
you know everybody's allowed to experiment when they're young.
exactly. You know, there was a lot of talk about, you know, public-private partnerships, free market
sure.
solutions to serious problems. And so, you know, it's really disingenuous that we see such an aggressive effort by the right to paint this as unconstitutional, which I think is just a completely erroneous argument. And it's really about one thing, Carl. It's what we've been hearing the
sure.
Trump beat for some time, and that is they want to just destroy this administration. They want to destroy Obama at any cost. And we're seeing conservatives say that in the context of the debate over this bill right now.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned that it was started off as a conservative idea. It was the compromise that Bob Dole and Newt were going to offer for, you know, in place of what the Clintons were offering in the 90s.
Yeah.
I've come to the conclusion that this president could do anything that the right wing would want him to do. And the second he announced his support for it, they would attack him. I mean, he could walk, he could go ice skating with his daughters over Christmas this coming year on the National Mall, and they would accuse him of trying to act like Jesus by walking on water.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, look, we've already seen that meme from them. I mean, I wonder if he got up with Steve Forbes and offered a flat tax, you know, how quickly Rush Limbaugh would be going after him, saying the flat tax is just a bunch of socialism.
My friends, the flat tax is for prostitutes and sluts. We need more
yeah,
bumps in our flat taxes.
Yeah.
I think that's what he would
say. Never mind that he supported it a week ago.
Right,
know?
Yeah. I mean, pay no attention to the facts behind the curtain.
Yeah, you know, and I think what this speaks to is something that's really dangerous, you know, in our political culture today, is that we don't have a loyal opposition, you know, in the Republican Party in any way.
Right.
It's an absolutely disloyal opposition, you know, and the 2 to 3 years of the constant accusations of everyone that disagrees with them being socialist, communist, Maoist, I think
pianists,
it's really just frankly a lot of protection.
Right. Well, and it's worse than that, right? I mean, you and I worked together for the first time in the House of Representatives on the Rules Committee, which is really integral to the way that the House operates.
Yes.
And when we were there, we saw Republicans, you know, they would hold midnight hearings on bills that really didn't need midnight hearings, emergency sessions left and right. And, you know, when we got the majority back, Congress made it a little bit easier on the opposition. And when they took things back, we've seen more, you know, especially in the Senate, we've seen more obstruction by filibusters and, you know, failure to get cloture than any other Senate in history. They've, you know, not confirmed appointments in larger numbers than any administration in history. They really just want to make it so that the president and Democrats that control the Senate can do nothing until Republicans take control again. And
well,
I guarantee you, the day that happens, don't you think that they'll turn around and say, why won't they work with us?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just as they've been doing for the last, you know, for the especially the first 2 years of the Obama administration, obstructing everything that the administration and, you know, the Democratic Senate and even the Democratic Congress back in 06 wanted to do, and in 08, while then saying that nobody will work with them, which, of course, absolutely has not been the case. And I'll tell you, I feel a little conflicted on this point, because as a strategist,
right,
I feel that the Republicans understand how to use the mechanisms of government to their advantage, both legislatively and politically. And, you know, however, as a someone who really loves the democratic process and values, you know, a democratic process in the House and Senate that has integrity is so important to our democracy, I abhor it at the same time. But I think there are some lessons for Democrats to learn from this. And that is, you know, you've got to come to the fight with the courage of your convictions. The fact that we've seen 26 states, Republicans in 26 states file lawsuits against this health care bill.
Right.
Again, one that they supported the model for initially and proposed.
Right.
That we're seeing this big fight in the Supreme Court is just further evidence that they were willing to go to any lengths. They'll use the court system. They'll abuse the court system.
Right. I always liken it to a
system.
I always liken it to a knife fight. You know, when Republicans get in a knife fight in an alley, they'll stick the shiv in, pull it out, and when you collapse on the floor, they'll step on your neck and break it, and then run down the alley in the shadows.
Yes.
When a Democrat sticks the shiv in, they give you a scrape, and when you fall to the ground, they call 911, they get you in the back of the ambulance, they offer to pay for your health care, and they ride with you and hold your hand.
And, of course, apologize along the way.
Right.
And this is something that, you know, progressives and Democrats have really got to wake up and understand, because it's been very, very damaging and frankly debilitating to being able to pass a progressive agenda, which if you look issue by issue at what the Democratic Party platform is, 60 to 70% of Americans support, the Democratic position on most major issues.
But give us a few months, Eric.
Of having health care for all Americans.
Just give us a few months and we can squander those kinds of numbers. I mean, and this is not about us having to be dishonest like conservatives.
No.
We just have to be extremely aggressive like conservatives.
That's right. We've got to be tough, and we've got to recognize that we're playing for keeps here. And like, you know, Sean Connery said in The Untouchables, you don't bring a knife to a gunfight.
You know, you're not allowed to quote Sean Connery on this program without doing an impersonation.
Well, unfortunately, Carl, I'm going to leave that to you because you're...
If you want to get on the rock, you've got to have someone who's gotten off the rock.
I am.
Eric, you're going to be back with us again tomorrow talking about one of the top political stories of the day, and again on Monday when I fill in for Tom. You can find more about Eric. Eric, you're on Twitter. It's Eric_E_Burns. Go follow him right now, and you can find more at bullfightstrategies.com. Eric, if the Supreme Court strikes down portions of health care reform, what do you think the next stage in this fight is?
Well, you know, I think that the White House and the Democrats are in a little bit of a pickle here, because either way the Supreme Court rules, there is a potential backlash politically for Democrats and for the administration. If the Supreme Court were to strike the individual mandate, it really cuts to the heart of the kind of the theory of how this health care bill will actually work to help all Americans have health care. And
that would blow the deficit out of the. I mean, it would increase the deficit so large. I mean, the mandate is what makes this affordable.
Absolutely, it is the linchpin to what makes this a viable and potentially successful. I believe which will be a very, very successful healthcare program for everyone in this country. And I think it will certainly embolden Republicans and conservatives to amp up their rhetoric on Obama. And to, you know, really, really kind of try to tar and feather him as they have done and they've tried to do, but I think with a little more success because, you know, the Democrats spent the better part of a year focusing on this issue and this issue alone. So it would be, I think, a very serious blow to the Obama administration, especially when so many people in this country don't really understand, I think, and certainly oppose you know, with or without a real fundamental understanding of its importance, this individual mandate, which of course is a product of the year-long smear campaign we saw against this bill by the right wing.
Well, Eric, we'll be chatting again with you tomorrow about another top story. Do me a favor and don't get stuck in any death panels before then, okay, buddy?
All right, my friend. Thank you so much for having me.
All righty. That was Eric Burns, the former president of Media Matters and my business partner. Follow him on Twitter, Eric_E_Burns. This is the Tom Hartman Program, and we've got more great chat when we come back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, conversations with a breast cancer survivor. This is the Tom Hartman Program. That's that new Madonna song that just her album dropped this week. I got to tell you, ILUV Obamacare. So how's that for a corny pun? Joining us now is a very special guest. Spike Dolemite Ward has breast cancer and lost her health insurance and got it back because of the Affordable Care Act. And these are the types of stories that we're going to be starting to hear more and more often. You can follow her on Twitter at SpikeArt. So go ahead and do that. Spike, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So I want you to walk us through what it's like to have something like breast cancer and to lose your insurance while you're fighting something like that.
Well, I didn't have insurance before I found out I had breast cancer. So getting the news that you have cancer, you immediately jump to the worst possible scenario. You know, you assume you're going to die. So I I thought that first. And then my next thought, of course, was, great, how am I going to get any kind of treatment? I don't have health insurance, and we don't really have any cash. So what's going to happen to me? I pretty much went into shock.
Yeah.
And I was saved by a good friend of mine who kind of picked me up and did some online research for me and discovered that there's this pre-existing condition insurance plan, PCIP,
right,
through the state of California, that is a part of the Affordable Care Act that I knew nothing about, because when the word got out that part of the Affordable Care Act was going to be that we're going to all have to buy health insurance by 2014, I took that to mean that I was going to have to pay $1,500 a month, which that's what we were paying before we couldn't afford it anymore.
Right.
And I just didn't know how that was just going to be impossible. So it seemed ludicrous to me.
So you become a convert when it comes to the Affordable Care
Act. Yeah, I was mad. I stopped listening. And then when your life gets saved, by the Affordable Care Act, yeah, I'm a big fan of the ACA.
So when you hear people talking about this being unconstitutional or, you know, liberal brainwashing and all the other things you hear people say, what do you tell them?
Well, even if I wanted the single payer or the public option. I'm a lefty on, you know.
I think this is, you know, step one. I think the public option is extremely important to create competition out there.
Oh, yeah. So I didn't understand that. I couldn't understand why. I mean, that just seemed like a no-brainer to me. But I'm not an economist, so I don't understand fully how all these things work, so I had to kind of, like, just trust that.
I don't think you have to be an economist, but it would have helped if you were a lobbyist, perhaps.
So that was the first bad news. But, you know, even if, let's say, in a perfect world, we all got what we wanted, it would still be, it would still have to be a mandate that we'd all have to pay into it, just like Medicare or Social Security.
Or just like cars. I mean, I'm from California originally. They make, if you have a car, you have to have it insured.
Yeah.
It makes driving cheaper.
Now, that's a state thing, though.
Sure.
So, yeah, so we'd have to go through this anyway if we got what we wanted with single payer.
It's also the only way to make this affordable. I mean, paying for people's, you know, medical problems, making sure that everybody has insurance, will reduce the deficit a great deal, because we won't be forced to spend money on emergency rooms to the degree that we were at a point, and because of, you know, early screening, we'll find things earlier, which
right.
makes things cheaper, et cetera, et cetera. But the only way that it becomes cheaper overall is if everybody has to buy into it. That's how insurance works, right?
That's right. So if I had bothered to do my research and do what I normally do, and that's go find the facts instead of just checking out of just being disgusted, I would have learned, you know, I would have understood that. So in 2014, we're going to be able to afford insurance. It's not going to be $1,500 a month. That's
right.
The idea.
And the notion that we're all just being given something for nothing.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
They like to make people who rely on the government stepping in and doing the right thing, they like to make them out as deadbeats. These people are not deadbeats, are they?
No. In fact, I got to point something out that's really funny. I'm a cartoonist, and I'm sitting in my oncologist waiting room a couple of weeks ago, and I'm the youngest person there, and I'm looking around the room, and I'm thinking, these guys, a lot of them are on Medicare.
Right.
And
keep your hands off my Medicare.
Exactly. How many of them would be up in arms about, if they knew who I was, you know, the poster child for Obamacare is over there, if they knew that I got this PCIP insurance, and they, of course, assuming an awful lot, and they don't know that what I'm thinking is, I want what you guys have.
Right.
I want Medicare for everybody.
Absolutely. I mean, but then again, now we're going to start getting those emails that say we're a communist, a socialist, a Marxist, a Leninist, a cartoonist, pianist.
I know, but here's the funny thing. My story got international attention within 48 hours. And so the feedback that I've gotten from people in other countries, and I've also done interviews with, I just did one for Swiss TV and the Canadian Broadcast Corporation. They're fascinated with this, my story.
They look at us like we're zoo creatures.
Yes,
they don't
do.
Like, of a species that they've never encountered before.
They do.
You know?
They don't understand.
So tell us about this place you live, America, where the streets are lined in gold and everybody has a home and a car and a garage and a washer and dryer. but they don't have access to medical care.
That's right. And if you don't have it and you get sick, that's your own tough luck.
Yeah, it's a horrible thing that people have ever had to live through that. Spike Dolomite Ward, I want to let people know that they can find your art. It's Spike Dolomite. That's DOLOMITE.com. That's right?
Yeah, that's right. Thank you.
And also follow you on Twitter at Spike Art. Spike, it's been a pleasure to have you on, and thanks for, you know, getting out there and making your voice heard on this subject. I think it's real voices like yours that can really impact this debate.
Thank you.
All righty. That was Spike Dolomite Ward. She has breast cancer, and because of the Affordable Care Act, she is able to have health coverage today. We are, you know, taking guests from just right by the Supreme Court. And in the next hour, we're going to be chatting with some great folks, including Doug Kendall from the Constitutional Accountability Center and Rep. Jan Schakowsky. You won't want to miss it. So stick around, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Top of the hour. It's about 6 after 4 p.m. Eastern. Filling in for Tom today, I'm Carl Frisch. You can find more about me at carlfrisch.com. I'm a partner at Bullfight Strategies, where we help progressives win in the media arena. Syndicated columnist. You might recognize me from MSNBC or Current Television, or recognize my voice from filling in for Tom from time to time, and Stephanie Miller and Bill Press as well. It's a jam-packed day today. We're talking about the Constitution in this segment and the case before the Supreme Court, where right-wing attorney generals are fighting to stop the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. And I couldn't think of anybody better to bring on than Doug Kendall. He's the president and founder of the Constitutional Accountability Center, which you can find online at the USConstitution.org. Doug, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Carl.
So, you know, a lot of people are familiar that one of the big questions before the bench today is the mandate. Explain to everybody listening out there or watching on Free Speech TV the stakes here and what the arguments are.
Well, so the argument is that the minimum coverage provision of the Affordable Care Act, which basically says if you're young, if you have the means and you don't have insurance, you have to buy insurance or pay a pretty minimal penalty for not doing so. And so the reason that's part of the law is because people who don't have insurance get sick, they get in a car crash, they go to the emergency room, and every taxpayer pays for those costs.
Right, we end up paying for it.
And so what's at stake here is that provision of the law, which the conservative attorney generals are asserting is beyond the constitutional authority of the federal government, and actually a fair amount of other parts of the law which might go down with the mandate. And so it's partly about the particular provision, the minimum coverage provision. It's partly about other parts of the Affordable Care Act. And then it's partly about a lot of things that the federal government does, because if the justices agree with the states here, then there's probably a fair amount of things that the government, we rely on the government to do,
sure,
that they won't be able to do.
So explain to me, I've seen polling that indicates that even Democrats believe that this is unconstitutional, that Americans think it's unconstitutional, even though they support much of what the law is aiming to do. Explain to me why this is absolutely constitutional.
Well, it's absolutely constitutional because it's exactly what the framers of the Constitution wanted the federal government to be able to do, which is to solve national problems. That's why we have a federal government. The healthcare crisis is, the healthcare industry is a fifth of the United States economy. This is a market that is totally broken. Only the federal government can fix it, and that's exactly what the Commerce Clause is about doing. And so, you know, the problem with progressives is we don't explain. We don't take the time to explain why the Constitution requires the results we want to see. And it does perfectly in this case, but we've been cowed down by the Tea Party, and we haven't been talking about why exactly this is what the federal government should be doing. And therefore, even people who support the law think it's unconstitutional, which is exactly wrong.
Well, yeah, and I count myself as a constitutional progressive. I know you do, and it's one of the main drives behind the Constitutional Accountability Center. When we cede ground in discussing the Constitution and why the things that we believe in are buttressed and supported by our founding documents, don't we risk losing the debate entirely?
Totally. I think we have lost this debate to a large extent. We may win this case and still lose the debate because the Tea Party is going to be so aggressive about... Even if the Supreme Court upholds this law, they're going to be so aggressive about attacking it as unconstitutional and trying to repeal it in the political process. And so we have to explain and counter the argument that the federal government can't do things like fix the healthcare system under the powers given to the federal government by the Constitution, or we're lost in these debates. We can win in people thinking things like the Affordable Care Act are a good idea, and just lose because the Constitution plays as a trump card in our political system. If you can effectively convince people that something that they want is unconstitutional, a lot of times they'll say, okay, well, that's fine for the Supreme Court to strike it down, to take it away from me, because, oh, it's not really what the government is supposed to be doing. That's just absolutely untrue here. It's exactly what the federal government is supposed to be doing under a constitutional system, and we have to get that message out, along with the message that the Affordable Care Act is good public policy.
Well, and you've been watching, I'm assuming, the arguments being made, or
right.
Not watching because there's no cameras in the courtrooms.
No, but I was in the courtroom today.
You were in the courtroom today watching the arguments. What's your perception? What did you see today?
Well, I actually have a somewhat different perspective than most of the media coverage I've seen so far, and I haven't seen it all, but there seemed to be a pretty strong suggestion in some of the media I've seen that the court was likely to strike this down. I didn't really see that. Actually, the way I saw the argument unfold is the conservatives came out, conservatives on the bench came out very skeptical of the law. But over the course of the 2 hours, I think the weakness of the challengers to the act's claim just became more and more apparent. And I think by the end of the day, the end of the 2 hour argument, there were one or two conservatives that very well may side for the federal government here and uphold the act. You can never predict
sure.
any of this with certainty, but the questions that Justice Kennedy and Chief Justice Roberts were asking at the end of the argument suggested that they were pretty skeptical about what the states were trying to pull over on them today. And
did any of those questions stand out that you might remember?
Yeah, no. The last question Justice Kennedy asked, it was really more of a statement than a question, but he said basically that everything in life is about drawing lines and about relative questions. And his point was, and then he said after that, the activity here seems uniquely proximate to the problem Congress was trying to fix. In other words, he's saying, the mandate, which requires people to buy insurance coverage, is uniquely close to the problem, which is the $50 billion of uninsured coverage that these people impose on the nation. There's this unique proximity. And so if he's drawn lines, that question suggests that he's going to draw the line in a way that protects the mandate rather than strikes it down. If what he said, if it is in fact the case, which I think it is, that the conduct of being uninsured is uniquely proximate to the problem Congress is trying to fix, then it's constitutional. And that's, if he believes that, which he stated as an assertion, not a question, then he should uphold the law. And that's, I hope, what happens. Chief Justice Roberts a couple times kind of agreed with a central predicate of the federal government's case here, which is that everybody in the United States is part of the healthcare market because everybody is going to need healthcare coverage at some point. And it suggested he repeated that three or four times and suggested that at least he understood the core of what the federal government was arguing. Where he goes on this, I don't know, but that's, I think by the end of the argument, he was pretty skeptical of what the states were saying, too.
Well, Doug, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. This has been Doug Kendall. He's the president and founder of the Constitutional Accountability Center, where they fight, you know, to uphold the progressive history of our founding document. Doug, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Carl.
Folks who want to get involved with the Constitutional Accountability Center can follow them on Twitter at MyConstitution or go and sign up. And I really encourage you to go sign up with them at constitutionalprogressives.org or the USConstitution.org. They're a great group, and they fight hard to defend the Constitution based on its progressive history. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Congresswoman Jen Schakowsky. You won't want to miss it.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next, Congresswoman Jen Schakowsky. Stick around. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom today, I'm Carl Frisch. More about me at carlfrisch.com. And, of course, I'm a partner at Bullfight Strategies, which you can find at bullfightstrategies.com. We've been talking about health care all day. And, you know, I love our next guest, Congresswoman Jen Schakowsky from Illinois. She's a real champion for working families and for women. And she said it right. I've got this Daily Herald piece. And she says that Mitt Romney is bad for women's health. I couldn't agree more. Congresswoman Jen Schakowsky, thanks for joining me.
Oh, it's always great to be with you. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. So, Romney's bad for women's health. I mean, he wants to, you know, cut all funding to Planned Parenthood. It's as if we're having this debate yet again. You know, the idea that Planned Parenthood is just some, you know, abortion mega factory or something, when in fact they're supplying, you know, the needed tests of, you know, for breast exams and women's health, exams. What do you make of Romney's positions?
Well, this is the new Romney, of course, because the old Romney was the, you know, Romney Care in Massachusetts, and the proponent and author of the individual mandate, and he supported preventive services, including contraception coverage, and that was then, and this is
well,
now.
Also, didn't he also put a representative from Planned Parenthood Massachusetts on the Board of Governors for his health system?
I believe he did, and he also sought the support of Planned Parenthood when he ran for governor in 2002. So that was the same guy, sort of.
Well, I guess it just depends on how you're holding the Etch-a-Sketch.
That's exactly right, Tone. If you shake leave it a little bit, you get a new guy.
That's right. So what do you make of what's happening today with the Supreme Court arguments and the importance of making sure that the mandate is held constitutional?
Well, I still hope that we'll have a 5-4 decision our way, and that that maybe Kennedy will decide at the end of the day that it is not only the right thing according to the law, but it is the sensible and moral thing to require people to be responsible so that the rest of Americans don't have to pay $1,100 to support those people who don't buy insurance, because that's really the cost.
Sure.
That's the premium we're paying for people who can afford it but don't have insurance.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we're having an argument over the mandate, which was a traditionally conservative approach to health care reform for the better part of 20 years. How odd is that for you to be seeing this discussion unfold?
Well, I mean, of course it's very odd, but not that surprising, because it's not even about health care. It's really about defeating President Obama. And that is why, Tom, that I am happy to see that the administration, and I think a lot of people, are relieved to now embrace the term Obamacare. We are carrying signs in front of the Supreme Court today, I heart Obamacare, because I do believe that this thing, after 100 years, as we finally have health care as a right in the United States of America, that we will be proud in the short term, not even in the long term, that this thing has become law. My hope is that even if they were to vote
exactly
down the mandate, that it would be severable and we'd be able to have the rest of the bill.
Well, we're already hearing, you know, not all of the Affordable Care Act has been implemented yet, but we're already hearing real life stories from people who have been impacted by the law. What are you hearing in your district in Illinois?
Oh, I have people coming in every day who are saying thank you. People who have children with disabilities. And in one case, a woman at a hearing that I am in at a press conference I just had this week said that her daughter, Olivia, was had a stroke shortly after birth. And they fought for such a long time. This was before the passage of Obamacare. They spent hours and hours every week fighting with the insurance company to cover the costs. And then when Obamacare came in, her daughter with a pre-existing condition finally could get health care coverage. What a difference it made in her life. We also had a young man who, because he lost his job at age 24, was able to go back on his parents' policy and be covered for the diabetes
really,
he has.
You know, that's one of the provisions that I think is so remarkably important, especially as this fragile economy is getting off the ground again. So many young people have been hurt much harder by the soft economy in terms of unemployment. And the idea that as they, you know, they've been told, go get an education, go get an advanced education, you'll do better in the workforce. And as they sit there mired in college debt, unable to find work, and then to lose their health coverage as they're trying to get back into the, you know, into the workforce post-college, isn't that why this provision is so extremely important?
Absolutely. Over 2.5 million Americans now have benefited from being able to stay on their parents' policies. I mean, it's a sad day when you graduate, you've got your degree, you can't find a job, all those things are an issue. But you lose your health care, it could cost you your life. And there was this young man who, you know, held up his diabetes medication and said, if I didn't have this health care, it could cost me my life.
So, you know, there's obviously other fights going on. We've got this issue in front of us. It's going to be a big issue in the campaign as we go forward, whether or not this Republican crazy train of candidates for the 2012 nomination ever reaches the station. We've got about a minute left, Congressman. Mm-hmm. Do you want to give us your prediction as to when we'll have a Republican nominee and how central this issue is going to be in the fall election?
I think it's going to be Romney, and I think it's going to be very hard for him to really argue effectively against Obamacare when his advisors have been part of designing it. But even more importantly, it is a good thing.
Right.
And a huge majority, 85% of Americans favor banning insurance companies from discriminating against pre-existing conditions.
And because of the Affordable Care Act, that's now the law of the land. I want to thank you, Congressman Jan Schakowsky, for joining me today. This is the Tom Hartman Program, and when we come back, we'll have more great talk, and we'll be talking to the National Council of La Raza about health policy. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, the National Council of La Raza's Jennifer Ngannou.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program with guest host Carl Frisch. Connect with him on Twitter at Carl Frisch and visit carlfrisch.com for more information.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. I am Carl Frisch. You heard it right there. Find me on Twitter. Find me on Facebook. Let's connect. Stay in contact. You know, watching the debate over the Affordable Care Act, over health care reform these last several years has been nauseating to the point of humor. And I don't know if it's some kind of weird political beltway Stockholm syndrome that I'm suffering from because I've been so close to the debate all these years or what. But joining me now to talk about what we're seeing today in Washington, I also want to play him a bunch of clips that are just fascinating to me and how off the wall they are, is Ethan Rome. He is the executive director of Healthcare for America Now. Ethan, thanks for joining me.
Thanks very much for having me.
Absolutely. So I want to play you a couple clips and get your initial response after each one. This is just to show you what has led us to this day. Last week was the second birthday of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. And right-wingers, attorney generals throughout the country, right-wing attorney generals, or attorneys general, rather, have been, caught up and they've been so influenced by these types of remarks. Let's hit clip two with Speaker Boehner.
Those same folks who were hollering about it before it passed, they're still hollering about how the world will end because we passed this bill. This is not an exaggeration. John Boehner called this passage of this bill Armageddon.
And clip three, Congressman Paul Brown from Georgia.
A lot of people are going to die. This program of government options is going to kill people.
And Tom Colburn from Oklahoma.
I have a message for you. You're going to die sooner. When you restrict the ability of the primary caregivers in this country to do what is best for their senior patients, what you are doing is limiting their life expectancy.
And one last one, Stephen King from Iowa.
They're going to save money by rationing care, getting you in a long line. Places like Canada, United Kingdom, and Europe, people die when they're in line.
Ethan, that's what has set the backdrop for where we find ourselves today. What do you make of it?
Well, there's a couple things. First off, it's just nuts.
Yeah.
Right? It just is. And anybody who listens knows that when people say you're going to die because a piece of legislation passed and they act like it's going to happen overnight. Second thing is and more serious, is it's fear-mongering at its worst. They think that they can do politics by making stuff up and then just saying it over and over and over again. And the reality is very simple. We've got a good law that lowers insurance costs, that eliminates the worst insurance company abuses. And that's what they don't like about it, because they're tools of the insurance industry. The Republican Party is a wholly owned subsidiary of the big insurance companies, the Wall Street banks, and big oil. That's who they work for, and they don't care about the rest of us.
I think that couldn't be more clear. I mean, this is also happening under a backdrop of the Ryan budget, or as I like to call it, the Hunger Games. You know, you've got Republicans not only standing up and saying we don't want 50 million more Americans to have the needed health insurance they deserve, but you've also got Republicans looking to destroy Medicare as we know it, a lot of places wanting to get rid of Medicaid, Social Security being, you know, put on the ropes as well. Isn't this about taking all the money that's spent there on hardworking men and women and putting it into tax cuts for the super wealthy?
Well, that's exactly what it does. They've got $4 trillion in cuts and $4 trillion in tax cuts. And so it becomes very obvious to know what's going on. And as you said, they want to eliminate Medicare as we know it. They want to decimate Medicaid. They want to gouge critical domestic programs that we depend on. They have a scorched earth budget that reflects the worst values you could possibly have. Well, I mean, we are about prosperity for all. They're about prosperity for the few. We're about opportunity for all. They're about massive tax cuts for the very rich. And that's exactly what their budget does. In the plainest way, it says we're going to give $150,000 in tax cuts on average to millionaires and billionaires who don't need it or want it. And we're going to pay for that by burdening low- and middle-income class families.
Do you know what I would do if I got $150,000 from the government?
I have no
idea.
I'll
tell you what I wouldn't do if I got $150,000 from the government. I wouldn't be installing a car elevator in my home in San Diego like Mitt Romney. I probably wouldn't be making any $10,000 bets during debates or bragging about how my wife drives a couple Cadillacs.
I like that he's doing the dog elevator because he's been getting hammered, you know, for that whole dog situation.
Well, unfortunately, his dog elevator goes, you know, bypasses all the floors and goes straight to the roof. So I'm interested to know, as you watch this, HCAN has been on this fight from the very beginning as we were taking up the mantle of health care reform in this administration and even a bit before that. What happens when the Affordable Care Act, the mandate, is upheld as constitutional? First of all, I think there will be a lot of progressives who are shocked. I had Doug Kendall on from the Constitutional Accountability Center, who was in the Supreme Court today watching what was happening and, you know, kind of caught some interesting comments and posturing from Justices Kennedy and Roberts. What happens if it's upheld?
Well, I think first off, I think it's going to be upheld. And I know that a lot of folks were pessimistic about some of the questioning today by the justices, but it's their job to ask tough questions.
Well, not only that, but don't you think that there's also justices, because of, you know, the legacy of Roe versus Wade and the way that that was politicized and how it was used to malign the bench, don't you think that more conservative justices on the bench, even if they're going to end up siding with the majority opinion that upholds the mandate, don't you think that it behooves them to at least posture in an aggressive way?
I think they have to, because particularly for the conservative judges, they do have to play to their base, and that's the way in which it is a political bench. They do still have a base, but if they want to make a non-ideological, non-political decision on the merits, if they want to actually make this decision based on the Constitution and precedent, which would require that they find this law constitutional, then they've got to ask the most tough questions that they can, put this under rigorous examination, and that's how you can tell that the two biggest votes, the two biggest swing votes, are Roberts and Kennedy, because they asked the toughest, most thoughtful questions.
You know,
today.
And Kennedy, it seemed, at least from Doug Kendall's perspective, it seemed was really zeroing in on how closely tailored the Affordable Care Act, the mandate, was to addressing the problem that the bill was designed to fix, the national problem of the uninsured that costs all taxpayers, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars.
That's correct. And he also articulated, as well as anyone could, the unique dynamics of the health insurance market. And he said, if it's an issue of degree as opposed to an issue of kind, then if there's ever an instance in which Congress needs to reach in and regulate a market, which was the perspective he was taking,
right,
then health care is it. And of course it is. Of course it is, because it is a unique market. Because
well, you've got monopolies all over the place. You've got state legislatures saying that they'll go by the weakest regulations out there. It's
right. I mean, the way I think about it is very simple. It's a universal market where participation is universal, but it's not voluntary, and where costs are shifted to those of us who choose to purchase insurance.
Right.
But those of us who don't or can't, because it's unaffordable or because we can't get a policy because the insurance companies won't sell it, when we get care, thank goodness, in this country, we're going to get it. But it's still going to get paid for.
Right. And, you know, you put 50 million more Americans on the health insurance rolls, and that just naturally brings the cost of health care down, doesn't it?
Well, that's the whole point of insurance. I mean, that's because there was actually... Right. It spreads out the risk across generations as well as in any period of time. So there was a conversation today where Alito said, where he was questioning the government and saying, but what about young and healthy people? Should they really be subsidizing older folks? And the answer is yes. That's why we invented Medicare.
And you know
why we invented Social Security.
That's such an interesting question.
That's the whole point.
Well, it works the opposite direction too. Should the elderly and the middle-aged and the young adults be subsidizing children by paying for roads to get them to school and for public schools?
This is why God invented taxes. We have taxes and we have insurance because we are a country and a civilization based on pitching in for the greater good and for understanding that we need government to bring us together to do things we can't do ourselves.
Right. Render to God what is God's and to Caesar what is Caesar's.
And so that's why, you know, I think, but the reality is that this court case is taking place within the broader fight over the kind of America that we want to live in. And the Republicans have made clear they want to live in an America where rich people get richer and the rest of us have to fend for ourselves and be at the mercy of insurance companies and banks and what have you. And what we want is an America where prosperity is shared, where opportunities available.
Ethan,
where
you want to know what I want more than anything? What I want more than anything
you
is...
You want that 150 grand.
I want the Supreme Court to do the right thing, please, for the first time in the last several years. Ethan Rome, he's the Executive Director of Healthcare for America Now. Ethan, thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much.
Find out more about them at healthcareforamericanow.org. Sign up for their email list. Follow them on Twitter at HCAN. They do great work. This is the Tom Hartman Program, and we'll be back in just a minute.
listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, we'll be talking about health policy with a representative from the Council of La Raza. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom today, I'm Carl Frisch. Here all afternoon. We've got 10 minutes to go in this hour, about 4:50 Eastern. We've been talking about health care reform today. The Supreme Court is hearing cases challenging the Affordable Care Act's mandate, among other things. The health care reform that Congress passed and the President signed into law has impacted communities all over the country, from those who had pre-existing conditions, women who are being able to see, you know, see their various issues with women's health covered by insurance, but particularly people of color in this country, immigrants, African Americans, Hispanics, Latinos, who have been particularly overrepresented in the number of people who hadn't had insurance. They're really seeing a boon here, and I wanted to chat about that. And I couldn't think of anybody better than to chat with Jennifer Nandu. She is the Deputy Director of Health Policy Project at the National Council of La Raza. Jennifer, thanks for joining me.
So glad to be here. Thank you.
So, you know, the Affordable Care Act is obviously not a catch-all, but it certainly fixes a lot of the big problems that we had prior to it passing. Talk to me about the fight that people of color, immigrants in this country have been fighting to get basic, simple health coverage.
Well, if we talk about the uninsured in this country, let me just say that 50%, more than 50% of the uninsured are people of color in this country.
Right.
And so the
sounds
fight
like
on
a
the
fair and equitable system to me.
The fight on the Affordable Care Act was so critical to many of our communities, and I would have to say that you know, the work is not done, but we've taken steps forward already, and this law is a baby. It's less than 2 years old.
Right, and they want to strangle it in the crib.
I know, exactly. And so we're seeing co-pays disappear for preventive services, new workers, young adults, and many people of color are young. You know, the median age of the Latino community is 27, meaning that 50% of the community is less than the age of 27.
But these are also communities that are severely overrepresented. First of all, being young and Latino, Hispanic, African American is one way to, you know, show those communities, all those things attached, are extremely overrepresented when it comes to unemployment. So the need for the Affordable Care Act's clause to give health care through their parents for people under the age of 26 is so important.
Absolutely. And in the first 2 years, 1.2 million people of color who are under the age of 26 were able to get on their parents' plans. That's 736,000 Latinos. That is, it's a baby. And that's what happened in the first 2 years. So we're fighting to make sure that this law can have a chance. You know, it's not a perfect law, and we all know that, but this is a step forward, and we can have the ability to fix it as we go along.
Well, I'm interested to know what you make of these attacks. I mean, I have a couple clips I want to play for you. If we could hit clip 8 with Virginia Fox.
Put seniors in a position of being put to death by their government.
Let's take Hannity as well.
We get nationalized health care, it's over. This is socialism, and that's a kind word.
Michelle Bachmann.
Socialized medicine is the crown jewel of socialism. This will change our country forever.
So you are literally steps from the Supreme Court right now, and one of the reasons that you're there right now as they hear the Affordable Care Act case is because of the crazy commentary that we've heard from right-wing conservatives over the last 3 years when it relates to health care reform, which is so remarkable given that the mandate is a conservative principle that goes back 20 years. How do we combat, you know, the fact that we are here because of that?
Well, we have to have a duty to try and stop this misinformation. And, you know, I say nothing says socialism like a small business tax credit, and that's one of the fundamental parts of the Affordable Care Act. So, you know, we're propping up small businesses. The only thing that I've seen been done to seniors is that they've actually been allowed to have more free visits to the doctor under their Medicare plans. And so we have to come out there, show what benefits there already that have already been provided in the healthcare law, and combat the misinformation that's out there.
For our Tea Party friends, you know, watching or listening at home, when, you know, the ones that have the signs that say "Get your government hands off my Medicare," I think we should probably just be telling them to go to Paul Ryan, right? Because he's the one that wants to put the government hands on their Medicare.
Absolutely. The House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan basically came out and said we want to gut Medicare.
Have you heard what his budget plan has been retitled? It's called the Hunger Games now.
Yeah, I know.
So, because we're all going to be hungry if it goes through, that's for sure.
Well, he's saying let's gut all the programs that are fundamental, that serve a lot of Americans.
But Jennifer, it's about shared sacrifice. That's what it's all about.
Well, I agree in shared responsibility. I don't necessarily, if shared sacrifice is giving the wealthy more tax breaks, while people who have been hit hard, working class people, get hit hard by the economic downturn, that's not my idea of shared sacrifice.
But Mitzi and Pater have to go to San Lucas this spring. I mean, how can they get there without their big tax break?
Well, you know, I think when we start saving money on the Affordable Care Act and people start getting their coverage, then, you know, that boost will come.
And you
want
to talk about real savings. I mean, the Affordable Care Act will save us $600 billion in the first couple of years. And that's money that will be coming right off the top of that deficit. So, Jennifer Nandu, I want to thank you for joining me today. She is the Deputy Director of Health Policy Project at the National Council of La Raza, and you can find her at Kanu Nandu on Twitter, and also follow the NCLR on Twitter at NCLR, or go to their website, nclr.org. When we come back in the next hour, we're going to be talking to one of my favorite members of Congress, Congresswoman Linda Sanchez from California.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom this afternoon in this final hour of the show. I am Carl Frisch. You can find more about me at carlfrisch.com. That's carlfrisch.com. You may know me from my time filling in for Tom, from other progressive radio shows, Current, MSNBC, wherever. I'm also a partner at Bullfight Strategies, which you can find at bullfightstrategies.com, where we win in the media arena for our progressive friends. Joining me next is one of my favorite members of Congress. She hails from my home state of California, and she is over there by the Supreme Court as we're talking about health care reform and its fate before the Roberts bench. Congresswoman Linda Sanchez, thanks for joining me. Oh, I guess we've got her on the phone. Congresswoman.
Hello.
Congresswoman Linda Sanchez, how are you?
I'm great, Carl. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to have you on. We're both Californians, and I think we both know, given how big the California economy is what kind of an impact the Affordable Care Act can really have on people that are struggling to get by.
Sure. Well, number one, it does a lot of tremendous things for seniors in particular, with respect to seniors who found themselves falling into the donut hole.
Sure.
It has the potential to save them quite a bit of money, on average about over $16,000 over the next 10 years. So that's quite a chunk. It also has tremendous benefits for young people who can now stay on their parents' health care plans until age 26. And what that has meant is a huge increase in the number of young adults who now have health care coverage. And for women, it is a tremendous benefit as well, because not just women in particular, but all folks will have the ability to receive preventive services, but for women in particular, things like mammograms, bone density scans, cervical cancer screenings, et cetera, with no out-of-pocket cost. Well, so,
and, you know, Republicans being against something like that, where on earth would people get the idea that there's a Republican war on women?
Yeah, no, it's really interesting, but I think they've shown their true colors this election cycle in going after things that are really basic needs for women and for attacking and trying to undermine some basic constitutional rights that women have in this country. So it's very clear that they're not focused on what women's needs really are, and they are clinging to their ideology in such a way that that really could be potentially very harmful to women.
And for that matter, what women really need, I mean, you and I both know Republican women, and they must be watching, as we've had this discussion over birth control. They must be watching, thinking, what do these men even know about my life? I mean, birth control is not just something that women who are sexually active take to not get pregnant, right? It can be used for all kinds of medical conditions like cysts and irregular menstruation and all kinds of things. And what message do you think it sends to women? Obviously, progressive women are on board already with us on these issues, but moderate, independent Republican women who are watching these men talk about their lives without even knowing what it's like to live, you know, to walk a mile in those shoes.
Well, I think that's the ultimate hypocrisy, is that you have male decision makers who purport to know what's best for women without in many cases even having consulted women about what their wants and needs are. And with respect to things like the birth control pill, you know, they automatically assume, they meaning these, you know, Republican men who assume they know better than women what's best for them or than women's doctors what's best for them, assume that if you're on the pill, it's solely because you are sexually active.
Well, not only that, even if that was why you were on the pill, they don't seem to understand what the pill does. They think that you have to take more pills if you're
right.
Based on how much sex you're having.
Right. They are sadly misinformed about basic biology and the basic...
Have you thought of having some kind of a meeting where some of the women in Congress get the Republican men around, you know, put them in a little circle and give them that talk that they should have gotten from their parents many years ago about the birds and the bees?
Yeah, it's very clear that they must have skipped that class in, you know, sex ed.
Well, I don't want to tell you what they actually teach in the Republican version of that class.
Right.
It's not much.
Most of their parents probably, you know, didn't let them sit in on those classes, which is why there is this lack of basic knowledge about women's reproductive systems and the many benefits. I wanted to get back to this point.
Sure.
It's a very important one, of the birth control pill, because it also helps reduce cancer in women, cervical cancer, uterine cancer, even colon cancer. It can help reduce that up to 50%. So it really is a tremendous preventive piece of medicine, and men completely seem to have missed that point. It is used to treat many different conditions, such as cysts, irregular or excruciatingly painful periods, many other conditions, and they just automatically assume that if you are on the pill, it must be because you're sex crazed and you're just sexually active, and that's the only benefit of that pill.
Well, you know,
interestingly enough, most insurance plans cover Viagra,
right?
Which sole purpose is for sexually, you know, active men or men who wish to be sexually active.
Which I find so ludicrous. I mean, think about it this way. The argument that came around when the Catholic bishops, you know, raised their funny hats was that, you know, we don't want to be paying for the sins of our employees, or, you know, that's basically what it is watered down to. Meanwhile, their coverage plans cover Viagra without even thinking for a moment that men who might be single and not in a marriage might be taking Viagra so that they can, you know, it shows how completely there is a giant double standard out there.
It's called hypocrisy, and it's something that's not new to these men, again, who
right.
want to be the moral police and control things, but there certainly is a double standard. And, by the way, you know, all these, like, consent laws that they're trying to force upon
right.
women, you know, I wonder how they would feel if they had to get the consent of their wives or doctors in order to get, you know, Viagra or be counseled by their doctors in order to get their...
Well, and those are the wives. Tamer versions of the legislation that are being pushed in these states where... you know, women are being subjected to ridiculous treatments, whether it's, you know, transvaginal ultrasounds, whatever. You know, there's that one bill in Arizona that's been pushed where doctors would be allowed to lie to women who are pregnant about whether or not the child might have a life-threatening illness or be handicapped in some way if they feared that the woman might have an abortion. Imagine if we were saying that doctors who had a moral... objection to a man taking Viagra wouldn't have to tell them if taking Viagra would kill them because, you know, they're a sinner and they should just suffer the consequences.
Right. It really is, again, a scary situation when you are injecting your biased moral outlook on life onto other people. And I think we should just let science speak for itself.
Well, that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yes. We should let, you know, people who are informed about the biology and the science behind all of this, let them make the consultations with their patients and ultimately allow the patients to choose. But
well, you know, Congressman, I would love to let science rule the day, but unfortunately, you know, if you told your Republican colleagues to take a walk around the globe and get some experience in worldly affairs, they'd probably be fearful of falling off the edge of the earth. They're a bunch of flat earthers as far as I'm concerned. One quick question before we have to let you go. We've got just a few seconds left. I get this question all the time. How much do you believe your colleagues in Washington believe what they're doing versus just doing it to appease the base? We've just got a few seconds.
Sadly, I think that there are probably a number of folks who don't really believe that this is what they should be doing. Or
that's perhaps worst of all, that they don't actually believe it. They're just doing it to get favor among the right-wing base. Congressman Linda Sanchez, thank you for joining me. This is the Tom Hartman Program, and we'll be back in just a minute.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next, we'll be talking to Bill Roach from the American Heart Association. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom. I'm Carl Frisch all afternoon. It's about 20 after. You can find more about me at carlfrisch.com. Follow me on Twitter. Push me over that 10,000 mark already, at Carl Frisch, K-A-R-L-F-R-I-S-C-H. Joining me now is the chairman of the American Heart Association, Bill Roach. Bill, thanks for joining me.
Hello, Carl.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
So you've been watching today's news. What do you make of it?
Well, one never knows how this is going to unfold. It's for us a welcome opportunity to resolve some of the issues with this act. It's an important act to us, and I think it's an important act for the nation's health. So we're pleased to see this moving forward.
Well, you know, I had Doug Kendall from the Constitutional Accountability Center on earlier in the program, and he said as he sat in and watched the arguments today, he said that it was his perception that Justices Stevens and Kennedy seemed to be pointing in a direction of voting to uphold the constitutionality of the mandate, if for no other reason than the mandate was so closely tailored to the problem it was trying to address. How important do you think it is to uphold that mandate?
We think it's very important. The goal that we have as an organization is by 2020 to improve the cardiovascular health of all Americans, by 20%, and to reduce deaths from cardiovascular diseases and stroke by 20%. To get there, that's a very ambitious goal. To get there, we need for people to have guaranteed affordable health care. And that mandate we see as an important piece of making healthcare available to cardiovascular patients and stroke patients who often are facing denial of insurance coverage or reduction of insurance coverage because of their pre-existing condition or current health. Without the mandate, the principle of the insurance pool, as it seems to us, fails.
Right.
And I think the states that have enacted prohibitions against denial for precondition and chronic disease without a mandate have shown that it won't work. The insurance becomes too expensive, and in a couple of states, we've seen repeals of those patient protections. So to us, it's a critical piece and an important piece to achieve that principle of coverage.
Well, you know, from a cultural perspective, it occurs to me that when a child grows up in a family that has insurance and uses its insurance for checkups and physicals, and when somebody gets sick, they go and see a doctor to make sure everything's okay. When somebody grows up in a household that has insurance from the time they're born and they're not worried about losing that insurance, you tend to end up, you perhaps in a generation or two, end up with a healthier country simply because people have always had access, at least in their, you know, memory, have always had access to decent care and have always felt comfortable going to a doctor.
Exactly. No, I think that's true. And part of that cultural habit, if you will, is understanding the importance of prevention.
Right.
And for us, the prevention provisions of the Act are critical because they will address the rapidly escalating cost of cardiovascular disease and stroke in our country. I mean, we're looking now at $286 billion mm-hmm. a year in cost, and by 2030, considering that over 40% of Americans are likely to have cardiovascular disease of one type or another, we're looking at $1 trillion annually in direct costs and another $284 billion in lost productivity. So,
it's not just the right thing to do, it's also good economic sense.
Absolutely. I mean, I say to people, we have got to control these diseases because as a society, we cannot afford the cost, and we cannot burden our economy in a competitive global competitive world to carry that kind of cost. So this act stresses prevention and makes is already making available to Americans preventive measures that will identify low cholesterol, will bring nutrition therapy to people and get folks to live tobacco-free, that will reduce these diseases over time.
Well, taking us out of the, you know, the politics of the day, just for anybody listening at home who hasn't heard the message of the American Heart Association before, how does one, what are the best steps that one can take to live their life in a way that avoids heart disease?
Thanks for asking that question. There is a very simple step people can take. If people go to the American Heart Association website,
heart.org,
and look at the button for Life Simple 7, they will find the 7 measures that will enable them to achieve ideal cardiovascular health. And if they can achieve those measures, things like reducing cholesterol, eating healthy, tobacco-free life, getting exercise, there are metrics there on the website that will allow them to measure where they are with these 7 critical factors. If they can achieve ideal health with those 7 factors by the age of 50, the chances of their having any cardiovascular disease or stroke the rest of their lives is less than 10%.
Bill Roach, the chairman of the American Heart Association, thanks for joining me today.
Carl, thanks for having us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Go and follow the American Heart Association on Twitter, American_Heart. We'll be back in just a bit, and we'll be talking to Laura Ruderman, a former state rep from Washington who's running for Congress, and she's got a great story to tell.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, Laura Ruderman. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom today, I am Carl Frisch. More about me at carlfrisch.com. Follow me on Twitter at Carl Frisch. We've been talking a lot about healthcare reform today. There's a great, powerful video that's made its way around online and featuring a woman named Margaret Rothschild. She's also got a post up at Huffington Post. I'm not sure what that website is. About her dance with cancer. Her daughter happens to be a candidate for Congress in Washington State, former state representative by the name of Laura Ruderman. She's in a primary for a seat once held by Jay Inslee, who's running for Congress in Washington. I want to play a little clip of that video and then talk to Laura about her mother's story and the importance of campaigning on a strong platform of fighting for the Affordable Care Act. Let's hit the beginning.
Hi. My name is Margaret, and I'm one of the luckiest people I know. I have cancer, a very rare and aggressive cancer called thymic carcinoma. The doctors first discovered it a few days before Thanksgiving, and I was told I only had a couple of months to live. That was in 2008. It turns out they were wrong. I'm still here, but it was still scary. I had a tumor that was wrapped around my trachea. It wasn't operable, it was getting larger, and it was cutting off my breathing. And then I learned that it had metastasized to my left lung. I immediately went into intensive chemotherapy, followed by 35 days of radiation treatments, and that shrank the tumor in my neck. But 9 months later, I learned the tumors were growing again in my lung, and I've been on and off chemo ever since. I've just started a new round of treatment, and I'm starting to lose my hair.
So the video goes on for a few minutes. You can watch the video, actually, if you go. You can find it on YouTube under My Dance with Cancer, or you can go to lauraruderman.org. That's Laura spelled the traditional way, Ruderman, R-U-D-E-R-M-A-N. Joining me now to talk about her mother's story and the way that the Health Care Reform Act plays its way in elections throughout the country. Is former state representative from the great state of Washington, Laura Ruderman. Laura, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Carl. Thanks for having me on.
So in that very emotional and powerful video, your mother goes on to talk about how the cancer was the best thing that ever happened to her in her life.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting as I don't know if you mentioned this, but in the last 3.5 years, five members of my family have been diagnosed with cancer.
Right.
And so this is an issue that is very much top of mind for me, and so I talk about it a lot on the campaign trail, and I find that lots of people have a story like this, and a lot of people say exactly the same thing, that when the diagnosis happened either to them or to a family member, that, as my mother says later on, it strips away all of that stuff that we think is so important. But when it comes down to thinking that you have a couple of months or maybe a year left with your loved one, you get down to really what's important, and it makes relationships can make relationships better and stronger and life more rich.
Can you fathom, I mean, it's obvious, it's probably slightly different if you're on that, in that dance, as it were, without insurance or without Medicare or different things that can help one through that dance and perhaps even, win the battle. Isn't that what the Affordable Care Act's all about, is making sure that people who, through no fault of their own, end up with a diagnosis like this, aren't rejected from insurance or kicked off because they've reached some kind of a limit in terms of spending for their condition?
I can exactly fathom it, because the one member of my family who lost that battle with cancer did not have health insurance. And So for five diagnoses, four people had health insurance, one did not, four are still with us, one is not. And it is not a direct line that she died because she didn't have health insurance. She had by far the most serious diagnosis of any of my family members. But I can tell you, because she lived very close to us geographically, that not having health insurance, not knowing how anything was going to get paid for, was one of the things that made her not want to fight.
Well, and it also must be a very taxing, way to think about things as you're trying to figure out how to fight this thing. I mean, if you don't have insurance, I mean, doctors always say that the outlook of the patient has a lot to do with their personality and their willingness to fight and their spirit. And I can imagine that somebody's spirit is near broken when they're faced with not only something that's life-threatening, but that could make somebody, poor.
That's absolutely right. I mean, that's absolutely right. And one of the first things that my mother's brilliantly wonderful oncologist said to her is that the most important thing through all of this was going to be her happiness. And that's not to say, at some one point with cancer treatment, it was all about, well, if you just visualize or you just have
right.
You can sort of, I think Barbara Ehrenreich wrote a great book about this, but, my mother has a lot of life spirit, and that is, as do my father and my other two sisters-in-law, and you can see that in how she has come through that.
What lessons have you learned from your mother's fight as you hit the campaign trail out there in Washington running for Congress? And people can find more about you at Laura Ruderman, RUDERMAN.org, or follow you on Twitter at Laura4Congress. Are you hearing a lot about the Affordable Care Act on the campaign trail?
I am hearing a lot of, as I said earlier, everybody has a story, and I'm hearing a lot about people wanting health insurance. I was elected to the state legislature in 1998, and I sat on the health care committee. And through all of my campaigns, I've doorbelled and doorbelled. I meet people at their doors, and I don't think I've ever met anybody who has said, I don't have health insurance and I don't want it. people say, I'm paying $1,700 a month for health insurance for myself and my husband.
And that's a mortgage in a fancy neighborhood.
Yeah.
Right there.
That is. And it's for the most basic level of insurance. I mean, that's with a $1,000 deductible if anything goes wrong.
Sure.
I've heard people say in this campaign that they're so happy that they can keep their kids on their insurance until they're 26, because in this economy, graduating from college,
right,
you don't necessarily go find a job that has health insurance. Even
graduating from grad school doesn't even necessarily mean that that's the case anymore.
Exactly. So what I've heard for the last 14 years that I've been in this, doing this kind of work is people either complaining about how expensive their health insurance is, or terrified that they or a family member doesn't have health insurance. And you mentioned it, but I will say again that people can find out more about all of my experience and this and other issues at laurarudermann.org.
So when's the first round of voting there? The primary is in August, is it?
The primary is August 7th, yes.
And then on to the general in November. What's the seat look like? I know that there was redistricting. Is the Republican candidate there a moderate? Is he conservative? Is he a Tea Partier?
We like to say that the one Republican who is running was Tea Party before Tea Party was cool.
Oh, goodness. If it ever was cool. Well, that's disconcerting. So he's obviously against the Affordable Care Act and probably thinks that it's some kind of Nazi conspiracy from the Obama administration to, wrestle freedom and liberty and justice away from, everybody.
Yes, In fact, I believe that he was in the legislature. I would have to check this, but I believe he was in the legislature when the Republicans in Washington State struck down the insurance mandate that was passed in this state in 1993.
Which is interesting, because in the 90s, it was conservatives who favored insurance mandates as a way to bring costs down.
As well, in Washington State, we're always ahead of our time.
Well, I guess in this case, they were ahead of their time before they were Neanderthals. So it just makes no sense to me. Laura Ruderman, if you have not seen her mother's story on YouTube, please go find it under My Dance with Cancer. You can also watch it on her website at Laura Ruderman, RUDERMAN.org. We'll tweet out a link to it as well. Best of luck to you out there in Washington, Laura.
Well, thanks so much, Carl. And I will tell you that my mother is so honored at the reaction that she has gotten from other cancer survivors and other people in active treatment. She is beyond anything just thrilled that her words have been
able to help. Well, it's an important story that people need to share, and we're glad she did. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch, and we'll be back after this with Wendell Porter.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, we're talking to Wendell Porter.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program with guest host Carl Frisch. Connect with him on Twitter at Carl Frisch and visit carlfrisch.com for more information.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. We've got about 10 minutes left to go in the hour and this afternoon, this show. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch. One last time, you can find more about me at Carl Frisch. com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Carl Frisch, K-A-R-L-F-R-I-S-C-H. Connect with me on Facebook and YouTube and all the other fun tools that the kids are playing with these days on the interwebs, the internet, the World Wide Web, whatever you want to call it. We've had a great show thus far today, and we've got one more guest today that I want to talk to about this subject before we call it a night. Wendell Porter is the former head of communications for Cigna, and he became a health insurance industry whistleblower. So he's got a fascinating story. He's the author of Deadly Spin. And as a person that practices the art of spin or being a communications consultant in my non-radio time, I feel a kindred spirit is on the line with us. So let's talk to Wendell. Hello.
Carl, hi. How are you?
I'm well. So you're the author of Deadly Spin. You're the former head of communications for Cigna, and you're a whistleblower. What do you make of today? From your perspective, where you were, let's say, 5-10 years ago to today?
Well, this is probably the most historic time that I've seen in Washington in a long, long time. I used to be a newspaper reporter, and the last story that I wrote as a reporter was a Supreme Court argument. So it's almost coming full circle. What the Supreme Court will be doing will have such enormous ramifications on the future of this country, not just our healthcare system, not just those who are alive today, but on future generations. So they need to get this right.
Well, and I certainly hope that they uphold the conservative idea of a healthcare mandate. You and I both work in the communications world, or at least have worked in the communications world, of trying to get the right message out for our bosses and making sure that the story's told the way we want it to be told. How gifted do you think the anti-healthcare reform, legions of, right-wing talking heads and politicians have been at demonizing this issue?
Well, they've been extraordinarily successful and capable at demonizing it. First of all, it's much easier to condemn something with a soundbite in a few choice words than it is to explain something that's complex like the Affordable Care Act. To call this a government takeover of health care and to say that it creates death panels, those are a few words that pack a huge emotional wallop, and people say them over and over and over again to the point that people believe them. And that's part of the trick. That's part of what goes on in the world that I used to inhabit, the spin of being able to get people to say things that are not true, to persuade people to believe it. It's manipulation of public opinion to influence public policy.
And it's really too bad we can't send these myths to death panels on their own.
It's true. It's exactly right. One of the things I'm doing is touring the country, giving presentations to explain how the special interests do this and why we've been so misled and so many Americans are unfortunately buying things that are not true and are so gullible.
Well, you know, and folks can find information about where you're headed on your website at WendellPotter.com. That's
right.
WendellPotter.com. You're also on Twitter, same spelling, Wendell Potter. Were you able to listen in on some of the arguments today?
Wasn't able to listen in. I've been doing a fair number of interviews. I've been, when I've had a chance to read reports of the arguments and what's being said, was said today, just next door where I am now, and from what I'm reading and hearing, it seems like those who are supportive of the Affordable Care Act continue to be losing the messaging battle, which
well, they're certainly
me.
Losing it in terms of the media coverage of what's happened. I've spoken to a few people today who were in chambers watching the arguments today. And they all said the same thing. The day started off with, you know, extremely aggressive posturing by the conservative justices. But as the day wore on, that Justices Kennedy and Roberts became, I wouldn't say that they, you know, indicated they softened, but that their questions took a very specific point that could be the beginnings of the basis for upholding the mandate.
And I think we will see that will ultimately happen. I think, you know, these justices... I don't think I'm speaking out of school here. They're political, and we can't pretend otherwise. And the court has had too many 5-4 decisions for us to realize, to think otherwise. I think that, as you said, they will vote to uphold this conservative idea of an individual mandate. It came straight out of a conservative think tank, and it is something that the insurance industry needs them to uphold. And I think they realize that if they strike this and declare it unconstitutional, that it's just going to take us back to the days when the insurance companies were in charge but not able to control cost or expand coverage. And they've proven that they cannot without this kind of government intervention to make them behave differently and to expand coverage. They can't do it without the government being a partner in helping to ensure, you know, getting us closer to universal coverage.
Well, Wendell Potter, I want to thank you for joining us today on the Tom Hartman program. It's a pleasure, as always, to chat with you about this, especially your unique perspective on what we've been seeing play out here. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Carl. Take care.
That was Wendell Potter. He is the former communications head at Cigna, who became an insurance industry whistleblower. Find him at WendellPotter.com and follow him at Wendell Potter on Twitter. It's been a delight filling in for Tom Hartman today for these 3 hours. Sign up for my email list at CarlFrisch.com so we can stay connected and I can let you know when I'm doing these types of things. Follow me on Twitter. I want to say thank you to Tom and Louise and Sean and the rest of the Jacob and the rest of the Tom Hartman team that have made this hosting a breeze. And stick around, and there's more Progressive Talk with Tom Hartman program tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.